For some people, Friday may be the big day they look forward to. For the members of the congregation, it's Tuesdays because we all come together here for the parish of the Patriots. Well, whether or not that's the case, I am glad you tuned in this week. Glad to have you back with us for the 176th installment of the Parish of the Patriots show. It's hard to believe. 176, y'all. We keep on trucking. I always like to open the show, of course. Bear with me. You know, this is the part where I pass the offering plate around. You know, there's nothing behind a paywall. There's nothing more aggravating, like somebody links up a news article and you're like, oh, let me check that out. And you click on it and it's like, oh, you have to subscribe. Subscribe now for $1. There's nothing behind a paywall. We don't do that. What you see is what you get. So in exchange, I do ask that if you can, you know, put a little something in the plate. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. Got Bitcoin. Got snail mail. Got Monero. If you just scroll down through the description of the show, you'll come down to where you see the P.O. box mailing address, and then right below that's the Bitcoin and the Monero. I said last week I'd had to kind of clarify that, because if you actually fast scroll to the very bottom of the page, the Bitcoin and I think there's an Ethereum address down there, that's for Radio Albion. Obviously, I encourage you to donate to Radio Albion as well, but I have had a couple times where people sent to that address and they're like, hey, I sent you some Bitcoin, did you get it? And it's like, no, I haven't seen anything. It's like, but I sent it. What happened? It's all a ripoff. Bitcoin is a scam. No. You went down too far. Went to Radio Albion, which is a good place for it to go. But to avoid that confusion, just scroll down a little more slowly. Where you see the P.O. box right under that is my Bitcoin, my Monero. So, yeah, it is very much appreciated. With that in mind, we, of course, my personal favorite, the listener supporter mailbag, Mr. T. GPD, hope all is well, and God shines his good fortune on you. Well, you know what? Very much appreciated, and I believe he is. I'm grateful to try not to be black-pilled or try to be faithful, encouraged. Don't be discouraged trying to be keep my head up here in the clown world. When you're listening to people, and yes, that finished up our entire listener supporter mailbag. That's why it's really important. You know, really appreciate you. Not everybody sends a note, by the way. But yeah, it's very appreciated if you do send something. It's amazing when you listen to people have like normie tier conversations, like you're sitting somewhere in public and you listen to like what other people talk about. Cause you know, if you listen to the show, you're probably thinking about things from a different way, a different perspective than what the average person thinks about. You know, you're thinking about real things, and you listen to people and their normie tier conversations and the things they're worried about. And I'm not to sound arrogant. I mean, my intention here isn't to sound arrogant or like, haha, those people are stupid and I'm smart. But you sit around and listen to people talk about things as though they're going back to normal. You know, they're going back to normal. They're talking about, you know, what kind of new toys I'm going to buy, or what I'm going to do here and what am I going to do there. And when I get my new boat, I'm going to do this or that. And it's fine. It's like I say, I'm not trying to sound arrogant. But when you sit there and listen to this and you're thinking the economy's collapsing, we're spiraling off towards hyperinflation as a part of the economy collapsing, we're on the brink of World War III, they're going to be warming up to bring COVID or whatever the hell else, some sort of pandemic thing back for everybody. They are rolling out more shots and whatnot. All of this is going on. Economy's collapsing. We're on the brink of World War III, which probably at some point will involve nuclear weapons. But, you know, this is what these people are worried about. This is what these folks are worried about. They're just pretending. You know, I told somebody recently, I said, you know, they were saying something about this. And I said, I think most people just choose to live in denial. Maybe a part of them. I want to believe a part of them gets it. You know, a part of them really understands. It's so frightening that they can't accept it. So they live in denial. Well, things will go back to normal. You know, this is just a bump in the road. These things come and go. These things come and go. It'll go back to normal. Things won't always be this insane. Of course, they're more insane now than they've ever been. Of course, the other side of that is, you know, people that just, that's all they think about. You know, this is all they think. And that's no good either. You know, let's be honest here. You know, you have people that are like, they choose to be willfully ignorant of how things are burning down around them, like the meme with the little dog in the burning house. This is fine. You know, but the flip side of that, you know, being aware of these things, you also have to understand, you know, your lack of ability to really change much of it. You know, it shouldn't be all you think about. You should have other things, because life goes on, you know. life goes on. I was thinking about things in your life, and I'm always looking for a better way to look at things, you know, because it gets pretty discouraging. Pretty frustrating, you know, when so many things are going on in the world around us, and they do, they affect. I mean, these people that make these decisions, you know, at the top end that have chosen a lot of these things we're seeing now. Understand, these are decisions that were made by our ancestors, you know, long ago, you know, decades ago. Our ancestors made these decisions. You know, the people that decided setting up the Federal Reserve and giving them the power over the monetary system, those people have been dead a long time now. You know, we're just now getting around to reaping the outcome of that. It sucks for us, you know, but this is a result of the decisions these people made back then. And of course, things going on around us, a lot of it, you know, like being on the brink of World War III, this is the result of people's decisions in power, and we're powerless. We don't have any ability to affect that. We can complain about it. We can talk about it. We can point out how stupid it is, but we don't have any power. These are their decisions. It can be frustrating. So I'm always trying to think about ways, you know, to make myself feel a little better about life. Always looking for a bright side. But, you know, thinking about that, talking about these decisions these people make and decisions other people made. And I was thinking about life simplified. You know, what's life about? What is life about in its most simplified form as you go about your life from here to the end of it? And, you know, really, it's collectively about decisions. It really is. It's just decisions. Like, you have people a lot of times and they'll be like, you know, oh, I hate my life. My life sucks and I can't stand my life and it's an utter failure. But, you know, and usually that'll branch into, let me tell you why that's everybody else's fault. Don't get me wrong. Look, I understand as much as anybody that there are external forces. But the fact of the matter is, most of the time, for the most part, what our lives are is the cumulative decisions we have made over it. If you're my age and you look around and you're like, man, why is my life like this? Well, this is the result of the cumulative decisions you have made over your life have brought you here. If you took another person and, you know, from birth had them make the exact same decisions that you have made, they're going to be pretty much in the same spot that you are. This is the result of the cumulative decisions of your life. And here I said, it's supposed to make you feel better. Here's the thing. Life's about decisions. And a lot of times I think we get stressed out over things that we really... Ask yourself this. If you're stressed out about it, you're thinking about something, ask yourself this. Is this a decision you need to make? You know, if what you're struggling is you're trying to decide what to do. You know, you're trying to, if that's what you're doing, then figure it out, make the decision, and then live with it. Don't go back. Don't go back and start beating up, oh, I should have made this other decision. Look, you take the information, because hindsight's always going to be 20/20. Make the best decision you can. And go forward and understand this. This is Hollywood. This isn't a movie. You know, this isn't a novel. This is life. Most of the time, there is no, you know, perfectly correct decision. Usually your chances, your choices aren't, you know, choice A with a perfect outcome or choice B, everything goes to hell in a handbasket. Usually it's going to be choice A, which has this benefit, but these detrimental things to it, or choice B, which have some other benefits, but these other different set of detrimental attributes about it. And you got to pick, you got to weigh between. In other words, most of the time, your decisions aren't, you know, this will make everything perfect and this will make everything go to shit. Your choices are, I don't want to say the lesser of two evils, but your choices are always going to be an imperfect choice. But make your choice, make your decisions, because it's all about decisions. And once you've made it, just live with it. And again, because if you get sucked into like going back and reviewing and that was a stupid decision, you're going to lose sight of the fact that you're doing that with hindsight. Yeah, you got the benefit. Now you saw how it turned out. You didn't have, when you made that decision, you weren't looking back on it. You were just trying to take the information you had and doing the best you can. Most of the time, looking back is absolutely pointless. Another thing is to understand, because if the answer, if what you're struggling and like you're stressed out about is ask yourself this, is it a decision I need to make? And if the answer is, well, no, this is about other people. These are things that are affecting me. In other words, it's about decisions that other people have made. There's the problem. Decisions that other people make affect your life. And this stresses you out and you get all twisted up over it. But you don't have any power over the decisions other people make. These are just things that happen to you. You know? I mean, these are just things, external things. You don't have the power to force people to make a decision that you want them to make. And sometimes these decisions will affect you. A huge example of this is if the ruling elite continue to decide that, you know, if they decide to move forward with World War III with Russia and China, and that decision winds up with a bunch of people being nuked, you can get stressed out about it, but you have no way to make them make a different decision. These decisions affect you. The decisions of other people in your life affect you. You go into work today and your boss decides, you know, to make your life miserable, to give you an assignment that you don't want to do. You can get all stressed out, but you don't have a way to make him make a different decision. You see, it affects you, but you don't have ability. So you have to narrow it down to, is this something I need to decide? And if it's a decision, don't agonize over it forever. Take the best information you can. Understand there's not a perfect answer and make your decision and then move on. Just keep on moving on. And once you make the decision, then you can move forward. We get hung up in place mentally. We get hung up in place mentally when we just start agonizing over a decision. We're afraid to make it. We just don't want to make that decision. Of course, refusing to make the decision winds up, if it goes on long enough, becomes a decision in and of itself. It's a decision of inaction. The point here is to kind of, I don't know, when you understand these things on its most simplistic form, I think it makes it more easy to deal with. It makes it more empowering, I guess, you know, to understand that your power lies in your ability to make your own decisions. You know, your power lies in your ability to make your own decisions, and you don't have the power to force other people to make, you know, to make the decisions you want them to make. And when you understand that, then you can just deal with things as they come. If you're feeling like a failure because, you know, your life has been turned upside down, but at the end of the day, it was turned upside down because of a decision somebody else or a group of other people made that you have nothing to do with, well, there's no sense in being, you know, upset at yourself over it. You know, understand this was decisions other people made that affect you. All you can do, only thing you have power over is the decisions that you yourself can make. Now that I think about it, I think this is going to tie in really well with our Christian specific segment this week. So hopefully you're going to stick around for that. You know, these decisions, it used to be easier. I think part of the thing that makes all of this, you know, I mean, it's kind of like we're talking about this. And as I talk about it, I think, you know, good job, Captain Obvious. You know, but these things become, they become not so obvious, I think, because of the convoluted systems that we live under. You see, under, like, say, a traditional, dare I say, a biblical form of governance, you know who the ultimate authority is. You know who's in charge. You've got the king at the top, and then you've got these other people. You know, and ultimately a man was in charge of his own household, all the way down to the king of the household was the man. You knew who was making the decisions. And because there was this clear cut under traditional and biblical forms of governance, there's this clear cut chain of command, you know, line of authority. It was easier to understand things that, you know, this is the result of a decision that, you know, the king has made. This is a result of the decision of, you know, the head of your town has made, and so on and so forth. But see, we live under this convoluted democracy system, and nobody really knows who's in charge. You use these vague terms like the government. But who's the government? I mean, that's just an entity consisting of thousands of people, you know? I mean, if your local branch of the federal board of whatever the hell decides to come and harass you over some statute that no one even knew existed, I mean, who's in charge of that? Who do you go to? Who do you complain to? You know, can you petition the king? No, it's just some bureaucrat has decided that they're going to make some kind of quota this week, and you're the unlucky one. You're the one that drew the short straw. See, there's no clear-cut lines of authority. You're just ruled by these vague entities. And of course, this is a perfect setup because no one ever has to take responsibility. The whole point of the democracy system is nobody actually takes responsibility. It's funny when people try to apply, you know, they try to apply the ways of old, you know, under the ways of authority of old. And they, you know, they hear these terms, like they read their Bible or even their history books or whatever. And they try to apply things then to now, you know, like, oh, we should live like these people, you know, but they lived under a completely different system. You cannot apply the way you cannot, in other words, you cannot necessarily copy paste the way a man who conducted his life and lived under a king versus the convoluted democracy system, because it doesn't really, it's a whole different set of circumstances. A perfect example of this, and a lot of you are going to get offended by this. A perfect example of this is marriage. We're going to get a little controversial here at the Parish of the Patriots. I'm going to tell you something that's going to be a little controversial. Because I hear people talk all the time about marriage, marriage, marriage. You should be married. You got to be married. You got to be married. Look at the Bible. You got to be married, 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 married. Let me tell you something. And no, I'm not preaching early. I'm just going to tell you a fact. Marriage, as it's laid out, as it was carried out, as it was conducted in society in biblical times, does not exist today. I mean, yes, you can go get married. It has nothing in common with biblical marriage. I mean, biblical marriage, people got married in the Bible. When you read about, oh, they got married. He took his wife. He took his wife. He took a wife. The government, understand this, the government had nothing to do with that. They didn't go down to the town council and get a license and whatnot. It just, this was how it was conducted. It was a completely different thing, is the point. Get tripped up over my words. Marriage in the biblical sense does not exist today because it's conducted by the government. It is a government contract. It's all it is. They'll say, oh, we got all these divorce rates and everybody's got an idea of why that is. Let me tell you one of the reasons why it is, because marriage now is much like the democracy. It's this convoluted thing. Marriage, as it's laid out in the Bible, is the man is in authority and the woman is in submission to the man. Oh, that's always such an offensive thing to say. And no, I'm not preaching early. We're talking about facts. I'm not preaching at you. Women always get their shit all bent up when you say that, don't they? You know, like you got women, they're getting married. You want to talk about a red flag? You got a woman and you're going to marry her under the current system. And when you look at, let's just do traditional vows. And she's like, we do these traditional vows. She gets her pen out, you know, I'm going to hold it up here so you can get the, she gets her pen out and she's like, this whole submit and obey to you thing, though, I ain't saying that. I'll tell you, buddy, that's a red flag. Red flag. And people get twisted up about it. Look, like we're all in submission to somebody. You know, we're all, there is somebody that's got authority over us. I mean, you can't just go out and do whatever the hell you want to because there's people that have authority over you. There's people who have, you know, we're all in submission to somebody. There's always somebody higher up. Even under a traditional leadership system, the king ultimately was, you know, it was understood that God had authority over the king. Even the king is accountable to someone. Now, got to keep it on topic. Everybody goes around and says, why do we got divorce rates? Why we do? And there's any number of reasons. Sure enough, there's any number of reasons. But let me tell you one of the biggies. There's nobody in charge. There's nobody in charge. You see, under a biblical system, it's understood. Look, as we just covered just a few minutes ago, sometimes your life is affected by the decisions other people make, but decisions ultimately have to be made. Are they your decisions or are they not your decisions? In the traditional sense of a traditional marriage, it's understood that in your household, in your family, you, the man, is the one who's responsible for the decision. Now, women always get bent about that. And I don't understand why, because it takes the load off of you, you know? Women be like, oh, I'm not going to have no man making no decision. But why? Because you do understand, like, if he's the one responsible making the decisions, if it winds up wrong, guess whose fault it is? You're absolved of any responsibility. You're along for the ride. If he makes the wrong turn, that's on him. How dare he? I don't like the Indian Rebellion. Anyway, said I wasn't going to preach. The point is, under traditional marriage, you have this clear-cut authority. You make the decisions in your household, good, bad, in between. Take the best information you have and decide what we're going to do from here. But we don't have that now. Have you ever worked at a place where no one is in charge? I've seen places where no one was in charge, where you had two people. Because, see, under a biblical system, under a traditional system, there may be those of you who don't want to hear nothing about the Bible. Is a traditionalist system. Just by pure coincidence happens to line up with a biblical system. But under a traditional system, the man is in charge. He's the ultimate authority of his household. And, you know, the woman is like number two under him. The kids come down under, so on and so forth. Under this current system, we have this weird, convoluted, like, co-equal partner BS. I'm trying to really cut down on the colorful language I use. This co-equal partner nonsense. I've seen places. I've actually seen places in my life that had similar setups. Like, well, who's the boss of this outfit? Well, so-and-so has this position, but so-and-so has this position, and they kind of together, you know, well, who do you go to if you need a decision made? Well, basically, it'll come down to people will go to this guy. If they don't get the answer they want, they go to this guy. And then for the answer they do want, and then they sit back and see who wins the conflict. Why is there so much conflict in people's households these days? Because there's nobody in charge. You got this weird co-equal BS. Because at some point in time, nobody's going to be happy with everything that involves a decision you make. So you got to make a decision for your household. And under a traditional system, the man says, we're going to do this. Well, the wife might not like it, but, you know, they ultimately, that's what they do. And hopefully things work out. Now, under this current system, what happened, the man says, look, you know, to keep our household moving forward financially or whatever the case may be, we need to decide we are going to do this. I've made the decision. We are going to take plan A and implement plan B. But see, under the current system, the wife says, that's bullshit. I'm not doing plan A. I think we should do plan B. I refuse to go along with plan A. Now, you're the man in this situation. What are you going to do? No, I mean, seriously. It's like you have this system. Like you look at a man and his household's a mess and there's conflict. And you're like, he's a failure as a husband and a father. What a... That guy can't even run his own household. He doesn't have any authority to run his own household. He's trying to make the decisions to move the household forward, but all it takes is his co-equal partner, who happens to just be all over the place emotionally, to say, I don't want to do that. I refuse to go along and do that. What is he supposed to do? Physically make her? If that escalates very far at all, then he's in jail. So, you know, he shouldn't come to that, by the way. Shouldn't be having to come to that. The problem that it comes to that is because men don't have authority. You have this stupid co-equal. That's why you have all this conflict in the household. Because nobody's in charge. You know? And she may really think that plan A is stupid and doesn't want to go along with it. But the problem is when nobody's in charge. And yet the system is set up where they put so much of the responsibility and the burden. And, you know, the burden for any failure on the man. It's like that you still, as a man under the current system, you have, like, you still have all the negative aspects. Like, you know, if things don't look good and things aren't the way they're supposed to be in your household and your marriage is failing, it's your fault. But you don't have the authority. How is it your fault when you don't actually have any authority? I'm going to tell you right now, if you're a married man in modern West today, you don't have no authority. You can sit there and kid yourself all you want to about it. Well, I'm alpha male, and my wife, she knows that. Let me tell you what, at the end of the day, you don't have any authority. You can't make her do shit she don't want to do. And you can, this comes back to the decision thing. If you say, we're going to take plan A, and she says, no, I'm not. I'm not doing along with plan A. I think plan A is stupid. I will not. I don't care what you say. The only decision you can make in that place is divorce her ass. Because you cannot force her to do plan A. You don't have the authority under the current system. Nobody's in charge. So you got conflict. You walk into a business. You walk into a business and you say, who's the man in charge here? Well, these two guys are in charge. Both of them. I guarantee you, I can guarantee you with absolute certainty that if you observe that business, it's going to be in a state of constant chaos. Why? Because nobody's in charge. Co-equal managers. No, they're not. You just have conflict. Conflict. Somebody's got to be in charge. Why? Because somebody's got to make the decisions. It comes back to, I'm still on my decision thing. Somebody's got to make the decision. Somebody, you can't hold people, you hold people accountable for their decisions, but they have to have the authority to make that decision in the first place. Do you blame somebody for a decision someone else made? No, that's stupid. Yet that's what we have. Why do we have conflict? Why are so many of these marriages failing? I would say one of the big reasons is because nobody is really in charge. And yet we act in the church, in society. We still act like men are in charge. Well, it's his fault. Why? Well, look, his household's a wreck. His family's a mess. Of course it's his fault. He's the man. He's the husband. He's supposed to be the head of the household, right? See, we try to apply what we read in our Bibles to this mess we live in today, and they have nothing in common. It's his fault. He's in charge of his household. Look here, it says so in the Bible. Well, yeah, but in the Bible, he actually had authority. So yes, he was in charge of his household. And if it was a mess, then yes, it was his fault. We don't live in those times. We don't have, marriage doesn't exist as it existed in those times. He don't have the authority. We look at a man today, his household's a mess. Well, it may be his fault, but more than likely he didn't have any power of the decisions. And what really turns into a disaster more times than not, you'll have husbands, you'll have men. They just get so tired of it. They just throw their hands up and say, you know what? You do whatever you want to, honey. You do whatever you want to. And usually her decisions are going to wind up being an absolute circus show. And what do people, what is the church going to say? What's society going to say? Well, it's his fault. He's the man. He's the husband. He's the head of the household. Look here, it says in the Bible, a man's in charge of his household, but he's not. Marriage doesn't exist under the biblical concept. There is no authority. Imagine being held responsible. Imagine if somebody came and rounded you up today and said, it's your fault that we have runaway inflation. You'd be like, huh? I had no decision in that. No, I had nothing to do with that. What are you talking about? But yet that's what we do. That's what we see as a society. Time and time again, oh, it's a man's fault. It's his marriage broke up and, you know, his kids are a mess. What a loser. Well, if we lived under the traditional concept of these things where he was actually had authority and was in charge, then yes, you could say, what a loser. He didn't make very good decisions and he ruined not his life, but the lives of his family. But it's totally unfair to do that now when he doesn't actually have any decisions or any authority. I'm sorry. He's got his authority as long as his wife will go along with it. The minute she says, no, I'm not doing that. What's he going to do? You know, really? I mean, really, what's he supposed to do? These things, they don't apply. You know, I see people, they're like, oh yeah, look here, the New Testament. It says you're supposed to, like those that are in authority, you know, you're supposed to submit to the king. We don't have a king. We have this stupid convoluted democracy system. What are you even on about? We just got to go along with everything the government says, you Christians, because see, it says so here in the Bible. We don't live under a king who's put into position ultimately by the Lord. We live under a convoluted demonic democracy system. It's amazing. You can't take these things. I mean, so you're saying
that everything in the Bible is worthless.
No, I'm saying those things work really good under those systems. Unfortunately, the reason we have a mess now is because we don't live under this system. We live under this current convoluted system, the democracy system, where nobody ever really takes responsibility. You notice that? Nobody ever takes responsibility under the democracy if there's a complete debacle. You know? If there's a complete public debacle. Look at the most, say something recent. The U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. Everybody agrees it was a complete debacle. What the hell were they even doing? This is like one last thing while we leave. We're going to bomb this family of Afghanistanis, of Afghans. I'm sorry. We're going to bomb this family of Afghans on our way out and go ahead and kill some more kids. Right here is a parting shot. It was a debacle. Who took responsibility for that? Who's in charge? Who made those decisions? Well, nobody knows. We would have to examine the chain of command, and this person consulted this person, and that was handed to the committee. You see, nobody takes any responsibility. It's nobody's fault. It's everybody's fault. It's nobody's fault. Nobody has to take. There's no accountability under this current system that we live under this democracy system. And I'm just using that. Don't you're supposed to be a republic. Look, the democracy system. That's the term they use. I'll use it. Under our democracy and our values, it means nobody's ever in charge. Who's responsible for the Afghanistan withdrawal debacle? Nobody. You can't tell me. Nobody can tell me. It's Joe Biden's fault. Really? Did he make every single decision regarding that? No, nobody. It's all watered down. It's all come that way. Nobody has to take responsibility. It's a great deal for those in positions of power. They never have to face any kind of blowback for bad decisions. But yet you do. For the average person, they do face blowback for their decisions. Anyway, I'm kind of sorry. We kind of got way expanded further. I think it's fun discussion. But to bring things back home, we got to get into the Christian specific segment this week. But to bring things back home, to simplify your life and to de-stress yourself. Believe it or not, it's supposed to be an idea that de-stresses you. To de-stress yourself, understand this. Look at what you're wound up about and ask yourself, what is the decision you need to make? If there's no decision to make there, then ultimately you're probably stressed about things that are the result of decisions other people have made. Or are making, rather, or need to make. You have no power over that. Let it go. This is where, as a Christian believer, you hand that to faith. Because you don't have any power over it anyway. These are decisions other people have made. If you're stressed about things that are a negative outcome as a result of decisions you have already made, you gotta let that go too. You know, it's already made. You made that decision. Live with it. Keep moving forward. And finally, if it's a decision you need to make. Look, there's not a perfect answer. You just look at the pros and cons of each decision. Choose one. It may be a 50-50. You can't sit there and the reason you can't decide is they're so close an outcome. Look, then just pick one and go with it and just keep moving forward. It's a simple, more simple way to look at things, but I think it's a way that might help you feel, you know, might help us all feel a little more empowered. You know, and maybe just de-stress a little bit in these ever so stressful times. Anyway, like I said, we got to get in here, get into the Christian specific segment for this week. So as I say every week, you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. So this week, I kind of have to warn you in advance or perhaps even apologize. I'm going to try to bring several things I've been thinking about and pondering all together into kind of, because they're kind of related into a singular idea, and hopefully this is going to work. It may or may not. It may be great. It may wind up being a spectacular failure. So at the end of the show, or you may come away and be like, wow, I never thought of things from that angle. That is really great. And or you may come away and be like, that made no sense. What is wrong with him? What's he doing? So hopefully it'll be the former and not the latter, but we're going to do the best we can. So stick with me here. We're gonna try our best. We're gonna go ahead and read a little bit of our Bible, kind of give us a backdrop, and then we're gonna kind of just launch off from there. And like I say, hopefully by the time it's done, it'll make some sense. We're gonna look at Mark chapter 6, verses 1-6 this week. And like I say, we'll just go from there. And he went out from thence, he being Jesus, of course, and came into his own country, and his disciples follow him. And when the Sabbath day was come, he began to teach in the synagogue, and many hearing him were astonished, saying, from whence hath this man these things? And what wisdom is this which is given unto him, that even such mighty works are wrought by his hands? Is not this the carpenter, the son of Mary, the brother of James, and Joseph, and of Judah, and Simon, and are not his sisters here with us? And they were offended at him. Who is this guy? They're offended at him. And Jesus said unto them, a prophet is not without honor, but in his own country and among his own kin and in his own house. And he could there do no mighty works, save that he laid his hands upon a few sick folk and healed them. And he marveled because of their unbelief. And he went round about the villages teaching. You know your unbelief, you know your lack of faith, any kind of faith is bad when Jesus himself, walking on the face of the earth, doing miracles, looks at you and is like marvel. He's just, he's astonished at how much your lack of faith is. He says, you know, the prophet's not without honor except in his own country and among his own kin. Those who know, who is this guy? Where'd he get this? This the carpenter. You know, we know his family. We know his brothers. His sisters are married into our families. What is this? Who are you? And he couldn't do a lot of things there. You know, it didn't say he refused to do. It just said he was basically unable to do a lot of works there because they had this idea. And this kind of gets into one of the main points I thought we'd bring together this week, and that is the power of the idea. We talk a lot as Christian believers, and we think a lot, we pray a lot on the power of faith. You know, you got to have faith, and faith heals you. I'm kind of working on this idea. I have a theory, as it were, which, by the way, doesn't really have much to do with what we're discussing today, but I'll throw it out there. I have an idea, because we, like with modern medicine, and bear with me on this, I'm not trying to slip off into kookery land. But, you know, we have to acknowledge that modern medicine only knows how to treat our physical ailments, right? I mean, that's the only thing they acknowledge is treating the physical. Would they give you these drugs and it seems to, you know, ease off these symptoms. But what if some of the things that ail us, not all of them, but what if some of the things that ail us are actually a spiritual sickness? We read in our Bibles, they talk about, you know, people that have an unclean spirit, that are stricken with an unclean spirit. But what if the unclean spirit isn't necessarily something foreign? It's their own spirit has become unclean because they have essentially a spiritual sickness that has gotten so bad, that is so severe, that it actually manages to manifest into the physical. You know, you think about, you know, if I say STDs, you think sexually transmitted diseases. But what if it's actually a spiritually transmitted diseases? What if those who are stricken with a similar spiritual disease come amongst each other? And this is where this contagion, this is where it becomes passable, because they actually pass it. And it's such a severe spiritual disease that actually manifests itself into the physical. And you actually see a physical manifestation of this. And doctors run around trying to figure out how to treat the physical manifestation. But if it's spiritual in nature, does it not make sense that this is why the disciples in Christ, you know, when they healed these people, you know, they weren't really healing the physical manifestation of the sickness. They were healing the uncleanly spirit. The unclean spirit. They were healing the uncleanliness of the spirit. They were healing the spiritual nature of the disease. And of course, once they healed the cause of it, you know, because medicine so often runs around and treats the symptoms, they don't have a way to figure out they haven't really figured out the cause of it. You know, the perfect example is cancer. They run around and figure out a way to shrink the tumors, but they never have figured out a real reason why the cancers show up in the first place. I mean, yes, there's environmental factors and things, but the point is that if their spiritual nature, it makes sense that Christ and the disciples and those who go around healing these people, we're actually healing the cause of it, which is the spiritual disease. And of course, once you heal the cause of it, poof, you know, the physical manifestations go away. Now, obviously, if you fall off a house and break your leg, that has nothing to do with spiritual. You just fell off the house and broke your leg. Anyway, I throw that in there. It's just a theory, something I'm working around in my head. I haven't even worked all the way through it. So, like, don't read too much into it. But I don't know, for whatever reason, I thought I would share it with you, because this week, we're kind of talking about faith and the counter to that, which is the power of an idea. You know, I was thinking about, because we talk about, like I said, we talk about faith as Christian believers. You got to have faith. You got to have faith in the Lord. You got to have faith. God's going to bring you through. You got to have faith. Faith, faith, faith. But what is the counter to that? And that is, I think, one of the things you can think of as a counter to that is the power of an idea. Or another way to put it would be programming, and we're all affected by it because we are programmed with these ideas our entire lives. You look at things that people have this idea about, I mean, say something. Say something like the Holocaust. If you talk about the Holocaust, you know, what people have this program, this idea about it. Because, I mean, I always say, people say, you're a Holocaust denier. I say, well, define the Holocaust. Because if you define it as, you know, we're Jews and others put into labor camps by National Socialist Germany. Well, if that's the definition of the Holocaust, then no, I'm not a Holocaust denier. I mean, I don't think anybody really denies that happened. Those people were put into these camps. If you want to get into, you know, was there a bear and an eagle in the cage and Jews were thrown in there? You know, I think we're kind of getting into something that's a little bit absurd. But the thing is, when you bring this up to people, they can't accept it because they've been programmed with the power of an idea. No, this isn't going to be a big talk about the Holocaust. That was just an example of the power of an idea, because when people were kids, you know, from the time they were born, they were told these stories and they're real and they were given these ideas. And they were programmed with them. It's the power of an idea. And we see it used and wielded to manipulate and control people now. And I would say the counter to that as a Christian believer is your power of faith. That is the counter. One of the things you are up against is the power of an idea. When you look around at people and they just, you know, they're just blindly going along with absolute foolishness. When we saw so much of the hysteria over the COVID thing and people were running around, you know, and it was amazing. It wasn't that long ago. It was amazing because they came out and said, oh, you're going to, masks don't make any difference. Don't bother trying to wear a mask. And then like the next week, they came out and said, well, you can wear a mask. It'll help, but it's got to be this special mask. And then they came out again and said, well, it doesn't have to be a special mask. Put this old T-shirt over your face and it'll help. It kept changing. But so many people, I mean, yes, we can sit here and kind of snicker because we look at it and from a perspective of truth and it sounds ridiculous. It sounds absurd. But when you went to town, what did you see? Everybody running around with an old T-shirt over their head. People staying at home, people whose elderly loved ones were on their deathbed and they're standing outside the window waving goodbye to grandma because the power of the idea. If you go in there, you're going to kill grandma who's on her deathbed because you got the COVID. Or you could have the COVID. Who knows? Let's stick a swab up your nose. It's the power of an idea. And people get programmed. And you look around at people and they just seem to go along with everything. But see, it's the power of the idea because they've been programmed with this, with these ideas. You know, it permeates these ideas. There are many of them. There are many, many more than we're going to get into today. And because we're programmed, with these ideas, we've been given these ideas, these notions. We've been programmed with these our whole lives. We have to try to counter them. If you took the idea of the disciples and suddenly transplanted them today and you said, hey, there's this group of guys, and you know what? They're absolutely celibate. They don't have sex. They go around instead and seek wisdom and knowledge and they tell people about these amazing things. People would begin immediately saying, well, they're probably homosexual. You know, they're probably homosexuals. Why? Because people have been programmed with this idea. Hear me now. People have been programmed with the idea that everybody has to have sex. Everybody's got to be having some sort of sex thing at least 2-3 times, maybe more a week. People have been programmed with this idea. And this is one of the things that is a great deception that is on the people now. People, you have these people that have been told their whole lives that everybody around them is having sex. There's this hypersexual imagery everywhere you go. And yet these people aren't having sex. So they think, what? They think that there's something wrong with me. You know, I'm a horrible person. I'm a social misfit. I'm this outcast. Because you see these people, they have this bitter attitude about it, you know, and they're bitter and they're full of anger and they hate and whatnot, because they have this idea that all these other people are having sex and it's just them. They're the losers that are sitting around and they're not having sex. But everybody isn't running around having sex, but see, they've been given that idea. Everybody's been programmed with this idea. You have to have sex. You have to have some sexual thing going on several times a week anyway. And if you're not, you must be a loser, because that's the idea everybody's been programmed with. And yet you look at, like, for instance, the disciples, the prophets and whatnot. These guys were not concerned about sex. It was like not even a thing. They had more important things to worry about, but people can't grasp, they can't understand that idea. Why? Because they have been programmed with the idea that, no, this is what you have to do. You have to do it. If you're not, there's something wrong with you, so you have to do it. They're celibate? That can't be possible. You can't do that, so they must be homosexuals. Of course, this all feeds into... This all feeds into now the idea, the power of the idea that have been given to the people, has been promoted to the people since at least the 1960s, that what? Sex is nothing more than a recreational activity. People have been programmed with the idea sex is a recreational activity, not a reproductive activity. You know, you think of things like your sexual drive. You know, well, that's part of the natural order. Animals have it. You have it. Why? So it will drive you to reproduce. That is the purpose. So the purpose of your sexual activity is reproduction. And you have the urges because that's nature. That's the way God built you. There's nothing wrong with you. You have that so that, you know, it is a reproductive activity. But you see, people have been programmed now with the idea that is not a reproduction. That has nothing to do with it. This, you could tie this into perfect segue from last week's show about Roe versus Wade. You see, it's an outrage if we can't sacrifice our infants to Moloch because it could interfere with our recreational activity. You see, abortion doesn't make any sense if sex is a reproductive activity. I mean, the whole point of the activity is to reproduce, and then it's successful and you reproduce. So you sacrifice your infant to Moloch so that you can go on about your life. It has to be framed as a recreational activity for that to make sense. You understand? If it's what it truly is by the rules of nature, which is your natural drive to reproduce, it makes no sense that you would then take the success of that activity and destroy it. That was the whole point of the activity. But you see, people have been programmed with the idea that sex is a recreational activity. It is, the point of it is the pleasure in and of itself. Now, because this idea, the power of this idea has been successfully pushed upon and promoted among the people, it is spread. It is spread, the idea, this idea is spread among the people to the point. Now, if sex is nothing more than a recreational activity versus a reproductive activity, then the feeling of itself, the pleasure of itself, is the whole point of it. So then by that reasoning, as it were, it doesn't matter what you do. As long as you receive the pleasure, right? And you can see where this idea then encompasses the homosexual agenda, which is, thank goodness, came out of the Rainbow Pride Month. Although, as someone pointed out to me the other day, really, you know, they say that's the month, but it's not like, oh, now we don't have to hear about that again until next year, because trust me, we will. It'll continue on. But see, you look at the whole rainbow thing and it all comes back to the idea of what? The whole point of sex is it's a recreational activity. If it's a recreational activity, it doesn't matter what you do. As long as it feels good, it's A-okay. But when you understand the way that nature works and what it's supposed to be a reproductive activity. If it's a reproductive activity, there's really no point in... it's so hard to make these points sometimes and not come off so crude and vulgar. But, you know, releasing yourself into another man's rectum, really, it doesn't make any sense. It has to be framed as a recreational activity versus what it is under the rules of nature, which is a reproductive activity. These are the powers of ideas. The point here is the power of ideas. And people have. They've been programmed with these power of ideas, and you've been programmed with them. When you run into these things that counter your faith and you find yourself struggling with it over and over and over again, understand that you're fighting against this power of an idea. An alcohol, if you're an alcoholic and you've been struggling with alcoholism, when you're struggling, ask yourself this. How many times a day do you catch yourself going, I need a drink? Man, I need a drink. good night, this guy I'm dealing with at work is such an asshole. I need a drink after all of that. I need a drink. You've been programmed with the idea that you need a drink. You're dealing with these stressors in your life. You're dealing with these people in your life that you don't like. You're dealing with your job. You're dealing with your wife. You're dealing with all of this stuff around you. The whole world's coming apart. I need a drink. Well, you don't need a drink. There's plenty of people who don't have to have a drink. But see, you have that idea in your head. It has power over you. Once the idea's in your head, then it's got power over you. And you've got to struggle and try to overcome it. And of course, this is where your faith comes in as a counter to that. The government and those in power use this power, the power of these ideas, to control and manipulate people. They do. This is one of the ways they get people to submit. Look back on everybody running around with an old t-shirt over their mask or putting a plastic bag over themselves and over each other so that they can actually hug a loved one. We're all in our plastic bags because of the power of the idea. The government uses these powers. Those in power uses, they understand the power of an idea and the perceived power of authority to get people to do what they want. When all of that was going on, and I repeatedly said on this show, you know, we have the power to stop that. People whining, you know, people that were even against it were whining. They wanted the government to quit doing it, you know, to quit pushing this on the people. And then the government should quit mandating this and mandating that and telling people they can do this and they can't do that and micromanaging their lives. And I kept saying, we have the power. The people have the power. If everybody in the country, if 70%, 50%. Of the people in the country would say, yeah, no, we're not doing that. We're just not going to comply. You ripped down the power of that. But see, you didn't see that. I mean, you might not have complied. I might not have complied. But enough of the other people did that they had the power. In other words, the idea of their power was promoted by the idea. I believe as Saul Alinsky said, I know, can you believe I'm quoting him here? But it is a truth, and it doesn't matter where the truth comes from, okay? Even from somebody who's wicked, a truth is a truth. And I believe it was Saul Alinsky who said, and I'm just doing this off the top of my head, the fear of the thing is most often worse than the thing itself. And as I said, a truth is a truth no matter where the source of it is. The fear of the thing is usually worse than the thing itself, and that is absolutely right. That is absolutely right. And this is where the power of the idea is so often when we're talking about ideas that are pushed from the top, from the elites, from those who rule over you, from your government. The power of the idea is based on the fear of the thing. Everybody went along with the mandates because they were so fearful of what would happen if they didn't. Well, in reality, probably nothing would have really happened. You know, be like me, go into a restaurant and they said, you have to have a mask. Well, I'm not wearing that shit. Well, you have to have it to be in here. Well, fine, I will leave. I'll find somewhere that doesn't really care. Go down the street and there's another restaurant that they might have looked at you sideways, but they didn't say anything. You see, the fear of the thing, the fear is how they get everybody to go along with it. The fear of the thing is worse than the thing itself. So they're fearful. You know, what'll happen? What'll happen if I don't, though? Now, why is this important? This is important because, and it relates to your faith. With your faith, you remove the fear and thus you remove the power. Now, last week we talked about Shadrach, Meshach, and the big Negro. No, I'm sorry, Abednego. You had to have listened to last week's show to get that joke. And my Old Testament that I'm reading as of right now currently is the book of Daniel. And just finished reading the account of Daniel in the lion's den. See, the king at the time, there's great power. He says, anybody, he basically got manipulated and tricked, but made the decree that anybody who bows to their God except for the king or makes a supplication or request any being except for the king will be thrown in the lion's den. But see, Daniel wasn't afraid of that shit. I pray to God three times a day. I'm going to continue to pray to God three times a day. I don't care what you say. And see, the idea was the power of fear. Well, oh my gosh, what happens? What happens if I don't want to be thrown in a lion's den? What happens? You can read the story yourself. We're not getting into it this week. But you see, Daniel wasn't afraid even unto death. And here's where your faith comes in. See, they count on that fear of the thing. But if your faith, as Daniel's was, as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's was, your faith is to the point that, you know, even if I die, I'm still not doing that shit. All of a sudden now, they don't have that power of the fear of the thing. They don't have the, it strips the power from the idea. You see, as long as a man is afraid of something, they can use that. And ultimately, the main trump card they're going to have with that is death. You know, if you don't, we'll make your life miserable. If you don't, we'll call you names. If you don't, we'll get you fired from your job. If you don't, we'll get you kicked off social media. I mean, those are things they use, but you can escalate it to the point of, if you don't, we will kill you. We will put a bag over your head, transport you to a black site, and execute you. But when a man's faith is to the point, is like, well, even if you do that, I don't care. I don't care if I die. It's better to be with Christ than be around you assholes anyway. I get to the eternal realm. I can instantly sit down and watch all of you roasting in hell and laugh at you. You see, when your faith is to that level, all of a sudden you strip the power from their idea. You strip the power that they have, that they wield through fear. In the case of Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and Daniel himself, the king's power, the king's threat, the king's decrees, they didn't have any power over them because it, throw me in the fiery furnace then. I'm still not going to do that. It's stupid. Well, go ahead and throw me in the lion's den. I pray to God 3 times a day. I'm not going to stop doing that because you say so. Yeah, but if you don't, go ahead. We'll throw you in the lion's den. All right. You see, they didn't have any power. All of a sudden, they were stripped of power. You got everybody in the entire kingdom, which was this vast kingdom. Everybody was going along. Everybody was, well, I can't pray. I got 30 days now that I'm not allowed to pray. I can't make any requests or supplications except unto the king because he says so. Because if I don't, what would happen? Oh my gosh, what would happen if somebody found out? Somebody could tell on me. I could get in all this sort of trouble. One guy, because that's the only recorded history you have of anybody actually being thrown in the lion's den, because that was supposed to be the punishment. One guy who was truly free. You see, there was one guy who was truly free. There was one guy who rejected the idea. There was one guy who rejected the fear. There's one guy who said, well, even if you kill me, I'm still not going along with it. I mean, because it's stupid. I'm not doing that. Not doing that. You're not going to have that control over me. I reject the idea, the very idea that you have the authority to tell me that I cannot pray to my God. I reject that idea. And I reject the fear of the thing. Oh, you might kill me. Go ahead. We're all going to die. All of those people in the entire kingdom, save for Daniel. All those people that went along with it, even though they knew it was stupid, they're all dead. Now, obviously, the lions didn't eat Daniel. The Lord sent an angel. The Lord came in there and told the lions, y'all chill. And the lions are like, okay. But even if he had, you see, that's the thing. It's like, yeah, but what if God wouldn't have delivered him from the lions? It really, in a way, I mean, it makes a difference because of our understanding the story we're given. And our understanding of it. But understand this, in the big picture, it really wouldn't have mattered. What if the lions would have ate him? You need to understand this because you're going to face things in your life and the devil's going to say, what if God doesn't deliver you? So what? If he'd been killed by the lions, you know, that was how many thousands of years ago? Guess what? All the other people didn't get thrown in the lion's den. They're long dead too. I mean, those people, like, they lived like a week later. You know, if he would have died in the lion's den, a lot of people died the next day of natural causes or accidents or whatever the case. And all of those people, every last one of them that submitted to the lie, that submitted to the idea, that submitted to the fear, they're all dead. Nobody even knows who they are. They're long dead, long gone, long forgotten, and it didn't even matter. But see, at the time they were caught up by the fear. They were caught up by the power of the idea. The power of the idea. The big picture didn't matter. We're all going to die anyway. Like, oh my gosh, I could be killed. You're going to die. Got newsflash. This just in. We're all going to die. You see, Daniel was able to counter that. He was able to counter the power of the idea and the fear which is used to enforce the idea. He was able to counter that with his faith. The ultimate trump card is, I don't care if you kill me. All of a sudden, now you got a problem. So if you're on the other side of that, as long as everybody's afraid, as long as everybody's got something to lose, as long as everybody, but when you run into a guy, it's like, yeah, I don't even care if you kill me. That's why these terrorists over in the, I say quote unquote terrorists, because if they're in their own countries, they're in, you know, defending themselves from an invasion, I don't think the term terrorist really applies. But nonetheless, we're not getting into all of that. But that's why these people, these terrorists are so difficult for them, you know, for the government to deal with, because they're not afraid to die. I mean, somebody's willing to strap a bomb on their chest and pull the cord and blow your dudes up. You know, what are you going to threaten that guy with? He's willing to die. That's somebody that's a whole lot harder to deal with than, say, a conscripted soldier who got drafted and sent to the front lines that you captured as a POW. He's probably going to pretty much do what you want him to do. You know, he's just trying to stay alive. The ultimate trump card is, if you're not afraid of death, then all of a sudden the list of things they can use against you, the things they can manipulate you with, the power of the fear, the power of the idea, are diminished greatly. At the end of the day, your power against the idea, your power against the fear which they use to enforce the idea, ultimately comes down to your faith. Ultimately comes down to your faith. At some point in time, we're all going to die, and it ain't very far off. Even if you're like 20 years old, if you live to be 100, that sounds like a long way off, historically speaking. Like I say, the story of Daniel was how many thousands of years ago? You know, people that lived another 50 years after Daniel went in the lion's den, 50 years is nothing. That's been thousands of years ago. It's like a blip. You're 20 years old, you live to be 100. Historically speaking, you're going to be dead here real soon. Not to be a downer. But anyway, you overcome these things. You know, just to wrap it up, the idea, the thought here is you overcome the power of the idea, the power that they use, the fear, with your faith. That is the counter. If you don't have that, you're not going to have a counter to it. This is what you counter it with, your faith. And the greater your faith, the greater you're going to be able to resist these ideas that they use, this programming that all of us, I mean, since we were kids, were programmed with. You overcome this. This is your ability to overcome this. And you're going to need it, because this is what you got to do. And this is your Christian faith. You're supposed to be struggling and growing. This is why we're here. Why am I struggling in this life? That's the whole point of life. That's why God gave you this life. You're growing. You're spiritually maturing. And you spiritually mature and you grow by overcoming these things. Anyway, as we wrap up, like I said at the very beginning of this, hopefully this made sense. I kind of took several things that I'm pondering and I twist and I'm turning around rather in my mind and figuring out and praying on and whatnot. I kind of incorporated them all into one thing. And hopefully it's somewhat intelligible. I think it did. I'm pretty happy with the outcome. Hopefully it made some sense to you. If not, I'm sorry for that. Maybe next week will be better. But I do. I think it came out all right. Hopefully give you something to think about. And as always, hopefully, you know, the way to look at things from a different angle than perhaps you've looked at them before. So we're going to go ahead and get on out of there. I'm glad you joined us this week. Thank you once again. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. It really does make a difference. It is much appreciated. I usually am on the Friday installment of the Daily Nationalist with Sven Longshanks. So be sure and catch us there. And of course, always be sure and come back and catch me right here next Tuesday for the Parish of the Patriots.